Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 3rd of July. It's the day before the 4th of July, and it's a hot day and another hot day, and we're gonna have a nice time this morning talking to folks, and we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Hopefully the day is going well for you. Why wouldn't it? There's a sign up in the bathroom. I just came from the bathroom. There's a sign up in our bathroom that says,
is that too much information?
About the sink. And it says, do not use, we're treating it for flies.
The sink?
Yeah.
I missed that sign.
Yeah. So apparently, well, we have all those like little fruit fly things, right? And we have these fruit fly traps, right, Alan?
Yeah, yeah.
And they put them on the ground, and we had quite a, it does the job, let's put it that way.
It's like fly paper. It is fly paper.
I think it is fly paper.
Well, yeah, it is. Now we will hear from certain people who think this isn't right.
Yeah, it's true. I know.
Okay, Libby, come on.
No. Well, I'm only companion animals.
They're spending their day right now in the sink, apparently. So this may be a better life. We don't know.
They've been there for quite a while.
Well, so the sink is being...
decontaminated.
That's right. Because I went in there to wash out my mug, and that's when I noticed the sign, which just made me giggle. Then the other thing is, I couldn't find. Are you on the Pepsi? Are you still on the Diet Pepsi?
I'm off right now for about a week, but I'll be back.
Okay. All right.
At some
and
point.
Why are you off?
I'm weak. Well, no, I'm trying to be strong, but I'm weak
we closed
overall.
The sauce.
Yeah, the sauce. Because I went in, so I went into the store yesterday to. Now, what is this? This is Libby has a. It's a 17-ounce bottle.
It next door.
So I could only find the little guys.
Oh man!
And these are only like 10 ounces. Yeah. So Kelly packed me three of them.
Yeah. When I was in New Orleans,
so it looks like I have a bowling alley over
when
here.
When I was in New Orleans, they had these long, tall aluminum cans like these. It was very cool. Took up less room in the refrigerator.
WAMC.
Yes.
Right.
What are you doing?
And you're rocking the WAMC tumbler.
Yes.
Oh, very nice.
And the Mount Greylock sweatshirt.
Why are you?
The full package.
And the AMC baseball cap. You got it all. You're decked out today.
Oh, well, I have a baseball cap. So
story. You carry the flag.
Dare I tell you that?
Take that hat off. Sure,
that's exactly right. I went in there. Was this lady.
Keep your hat on,
take
Alan.
That hat off. I said, oh, no, that's part of my persona. I said, take it off.
That's part of
my persona. It's really about, there's too much of a shine up there.
And don't mess with the cape either.
Right, you evidently sure did not attend Catholic schools.
All right.
Correct.
Well, if you...
Is there anything to talk about today?
No, I mean, if you haven't noticed by now, I have little or no interest in being here today. All right, so let's go.
Does the news make you that depressed?
Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Libby Post, you've heard from the whole panel, but let me properly introduce them. Libby Post is here. She's a communications consultant. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? Wonderful to have you. J.P. Miller is here. Good morning, J.P. He is the Empire Report. Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and it is a wonderful news service that you provide, a great aggregator of stories, and is not only beneficial but necessary for all of us who are news junkies and need our quick fix in the morning.
Morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you? Good to have you here.
Now the guy who does all the work for...
That's right. Who fills in those spots? Who's the big... who's the aggregator's best friend? Ah, that's right.
The publisher.
The associate editor.
The content producer.
That's right. The associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is back. Good morning, sir. How
good morning.
Are you?
Happy
and
to be here.
Alan Chartok is with us this morning, and he has his hat on, he has his shirt on, he has his sweatshirt, his Mount Greylock sweatshirt.
We're really happy he has his shirt on.
Yeah.
I should say that Alan needs a hooded sweatshirt in here because it's about 47
you
degrees,
can hang
I
meat
believe.
In here.
Sheesh.
Yes.
Okay, by the way.
Sheesh, Libby.
Love you.
You'll come, won't you?
What?
When you go outside, you'll be appreciating this.
Yes, it's true. And then I get into my car.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Let's get to the content of the show and find out what is happening in the world. We begin with the president on NATO. Trump is warning NATO allies to spend more on defense, ... or else. What does or else mean? President Trump has written sharply worded letters to the leaders of several NATO allies, including Germany, We'll get to Germany in a moment. Germany, Belgium, Norway, and Canada, taking them to task for spending too little on their own defense and warning that the United States is losing patience with what he said was their failure to meet security obligations shared by the alliance. The letter sent in June are the latest signs of acrimony between Mr. Trump and the American allies as he heads to a NATO summit meeting next week in Brussels that will be a closely watched test of the president's commitment to the alliance. Mr. Trump has repeatedly questioned its value and has claimed that its members are taking advantage of the United States.
So who hates NATO the worst? Glass, the answer is?
Vladimir Putin.
That's correct. And right now, we are seeing an unprecedented meeting between the president, who has been, you know, accused of being a little too cozy with the Russians, and people are taking guilty pleas and doing all that stuff. And so isn't this interesting? It's not that he really wants them to pay more. It's the or else, as Joe points out.
He wants it gone.
Which he wants it gone.
Yes. And, you know, I've been thinking about all of this. You know, growing up, post-World War II. I mean, my father fought in the war. You know, when we would talk about this sort of stuff, NATO was the great peacekeeper. NATO was a wonderful thing that we had created.
It brought stability to Europe for decades.
Right. And now, you know, this man is just destabilizing the entire world. And he's going to go to wherever he's meeting with Putin, and they're going to refresh the little chip they have in him to make sure that he does the right thing, because he is the Manchurian candidate. It's like all the bad science fiction we read as children is all coming true, and the Manchurian candidate is what we have in the White House right now.
Somebody's going to be writing us a note. Yeah. I'll anticipate them and say, oh, come on, Libby, how do you know that?
What, that he's got a chip? I have a universal reader. No. You know, look, this man...
I've heard that about you.
Yeah, I know. This man has done everything that Putin wants. He is destabilizing Western Europe. He is cozying up to strongmen. He loves dictators. That's how I know. I'm sorry.
Okay, you make a point.
If you were going to write a science fiction today, like the Manchurian candidate, all of what you just said about how we are actually enabling the very thing that Vladimir Putin wants, and that is destabilization economically and destabilization militarily of the countries of Europe. Add to that Brexit, which evidently the Russian trolls that helped Trump win the election also helped win the Brexit vote in the UK and causing chaos and disunity across Europe. You know, it's playing right into it.
It would feed
a scenario, and you know, I don't believe that there is a chip in Trump, but there is another explanation that perhaps, Alan, they have some goods on Trump.
Yeah.
No, I've thought that right from the beginning, and I've said it again and again. I mean, it is so clear that no matter what anybody who works for Trump says about the Russians and their interference and everything else, Trump just keeps on talking about how wonderful Putin is.
Mm-hmm.
And that would reinforce the Manchurian candidate, otherwise known as the MC thesis.
Well, and the money. I mean, you know, you're probably right, Mike, that they've got something on him. You know, whether or not there's a chip in his brain, who knows, if there's actually a brain up there. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that they do have something on him, and it's money. It's tapes, it's whatever it is, but they've got something on him, because why in God's name would anybody do what he's doing unless he was protecting himself?
Well, just to be devil's advocate, you know, just to
yeah,
be fair.
Go ahead.
Why?
Isn't it, I mean, he does say, isn't it better to be engaging with the enemy than being totally cut off from him and criticizing him?
Oh, sure, but there's engagement and then there's pandering.
I also see, you know, the U.S. presidents have long complained about the lack of burden sharing by NATO allies. The United States currently has 35,000 active duty troops in Germany. I see this in Trump, whether or not he's trying to placate Russia on this, I think it's a political winner for him at home. Both people in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are not excited about seeing European countries not pay their fair share in terms of defense. This is something that presidents for a long time have complained about. And this is Trump loves beating up on European leaders. That this is kind of his MO and his brand, and it's a political winner for him, or he believes it is.
So JP, the question is not whether or not they're not paying their fair share. As Joe brought up earlier, the question is: Are they about to say to us, "We don't want"? Is Trump about to say, "We don't want NATO anymore"? Which is, of course, the Putin playbook, right?
Well, the real question is whether he will affirm the whole fundamental pledge of the NATO members, and that is, if something happens, if one of us is attacked, we all stand.
That's right.
Immunity to defend.
And that's what about Crimea?
Right.
There's now been leaks out of the Trump administration, or suggestions, I should say, that Trump will go over there and say what he did was correct. In Crimea,
to validate the taking of a portion of the Ukraine and basically annexing it into Russia is correct. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And who was in charge when that happened?
I'm sorry.
Obama was president, and he didn't.
So Obama was president. He didn't do anything. So, but that was fine. But now that Trump's here, it's bad.
No, whoa, it's the recognizing okay and valid. I think those are two different things. In all
Where's
fairness.
Rich Honan?
So, well, it was okay for Obama to do it.
Wait a minute. Those are two different things. Obama did not march in there with the military forces to push back the Russian invaders.
Right.
And you can criticize him for that. And that may be,
I'm not criticizing him for that.
Right. But he never, nor has any American leader recognized that this was an appropriate thing for Russia to do. And if Trump goes over there and essentially he validates and puts a stamp of approval on that kind of fascist
Has
move
Trump
into
done that?
Country,
Has Trump given a stamp of approval?
That's the rumor Alan was referring to. These are reports coming out of the Trump administration that this may
happen.
That
he may do that.
Yeah. Oh, so he hasn't done it.
Well, don't be so smug.
I'm glad I'm sitting between the two of you. Or maybe I'm not glad that I'm sitting between the two of you.
No, he hasn't done it yet, but it'll be interesting. You know, he's going to walk in there with Putin, and there will be nobody else in the room, just him and Putin. No transcribers, no translators.
Well, it's the same thing happened in North Korea.
That's
nobody
right.
Nobody knows what
And
what
that's
was
going
said.
So well right yes. now. We keep hearing that Kim is doubling down on his production of nuclear fuel. That went well, too. He deserves a Nobel Prize for that one.
Well, the one thing I just want to get back to of we were in the beginning of talking about, to Libby's point, of what do they have on him, but it could be what he has, what he wants from them too, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, the whole thing, if we follow the narrative, mm-hmm. which is that A, he didn't expect to become president. And B, that the quote-unquote collusion/non-collusion was started to benefit the Trump businesses, then if we heard murmurs of this during the North Korean meeting, so wouldn't that also be an impetus perhaps for this meeting?
Well, he does want to build a Trump hotel in Moscow.
Well,
he's
yes.
always said that.
But this meeting, look, if they've got something on him, and I think they do, I don't know if it's prostitutes jumping on beds or any of that stuff, but which, you know, as you remember, was one of the prevalent rumors for a while.
You're leaving out one of the key ingredients there, but okay,
yes.
go ahead.
Right,
thank you.
it was urination. what? No, but if in fact this meeting, I think, is a get it straight meeting, you know, these guys, this could be the ultimate collaboration. Benedict Arnold would have nothing on this president if that's what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, I think you're onto something, Joe. I think what the president wants from Putin is a show of respect. He likes the idea of being looked at as a co-equal, as a leader of the world, and he really seeks and responds very positively to flattery. And if Putin is there and praises him, and they're there together in Helsinki in a couple of weeks, I think that goes a long way for warming relations between the U.S. The U.S. administration and
but I bring you back to the question: why is nobody else going to be in the room?
They don't want anybody to know what they say.
What they're talking about.
That's right. That's what we're saying.
Don't you think that the leaders, two leaders of the most powerful countries on the earth, should be able to have a confidential
Absolutely
conversation?
Absolutely not. Not when it's this guy.
You would also think, though, if you were one of the leaders, if you were Putin, you would have to assume that you're being recorded in the room. If you're Trump, you also have to assume you're being recorded. I don't think you can just speak freely. It's not like they're in their backyard and they turn the lawnmower on to drown out the microphone.
JP, those Russians, they don't know nothing. They don't know nothing. They don't have any kind of ability to make sure that nobody's recording anything.
Sweeping. Well, us, I mean, you know, we're not.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
We have technology, too, but it's a. Okay, well, we're out of time. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue.
What a shame. It's a shame we're out of time.
Oh, it's a shame we're out of time. Mm-hmm. Well, we have more time. We have a whole other hour. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's
we'll be right back and continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have many other things to talk about. We'll get to those stories, your letters, and much more with our entire crew. panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable, and to our scintillating and in-depth conversation that we're having this morning. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org. Alan has some letters. He is going through them now, fine-tuning them, checking them, making sure they're nice.
Okay. Obadiah says, "Good morning. Why are we afraid of jackbooted thugs when it comes to our guns, and not when it comes to the government taking our children?" Let's use the same Second Amendment rhetoric the pro-gun lobby uses. It's not that I'm against legal immigration. It's that I am anti-concentration camps. Thank you, Obadiah. And Rocco, our friend Rocco from Rosendale, says, Malcolm Nance lays it out. Putin and the Russians have played DT like a cheap fiddle. Read his book, then comment, MAGA, morons are governing America. Time for this to stop. And then we heard from Joan, who said, let me share a Facebook comment I made this morning. I have no apologies for it. As for Trump, if you talk like a gangster, act like a gangster, and think like a gangster, and your best friends are gangsters and dictators, that is circumstantial, in quotes, evidence worthy of a guilty verdict. Trump and the GOP are traitors, and Trump supporters are chumps and traitors, too. They should all be stripped of their citizenship and deported to their ethnic countries. Uh-huh. And Keith says, panel, many if not most of America's domestic problems stem from institutional sexism and racism as the underlying causes. So America elects a 70-year-old racist and sexual assaulter to fix these problems? What could possibly go wrong? Education, jobs, healthcare, gerrymandering, real estate all suffer from the effects of Americans' institutional racism and sexism in one form or another. Trump may be the worst person that America could have chosen to fix its problems. Trump is the poster child for these problems and is not the problem solver that America needs. And I thought I saw something that came in that might be worth discussing, but I don't know. Okay, let's go on, Joe, your show.
Okay, so let us, are we good with, we're good with NATO? Yes, we can now talk about Angela Merkel and the immigration deal. Germany's Angela Merkel prevents the breakup of her government with an immigration deal. So here we go. This is what has happened in Germany. Merkel avoided the breakup of her government, emerging from an immigration fight with her coalition intact, but certainly fragile. A clash that lasted weeks ended in an uneasy truce when Merkel and her party, the Christian Democrats, reached a compromise in immigration policy with partner Christian Social Union. Interior Minister and CSU leader Horst Seehofer backed off his threat to resign and potentially bring down the government. A hardline stance on immigration and criticism of Merkel's decision to welcome nearly a million immigrants in 2015 have been part of the CSU's political strategy ahead of regional elections in the fall.
Well, I believe the minor party is Bavarian in nature, bringing me back to something I used to think about. In any case, they have made it clear that immigration is on their list, just like it's on Donald Trump's list. And the same nativists are there that are here, and she's caught. as a result of this. So she has a decision to make, walk away or make a deal. And clearly, she's willing to make a deal to stay in power. And frankly, I'm not going to throw the first stone.
Well, to have come this far and walked away from it would have been difficult. So it was necessary to have a compromise. One of the problems is that as people who are so xenophobic and don't want people from other countries coming to their countries, and they get louder and louder, and they drum up the rhetoric about it and the dangers it brings, we forget that even people who are moderate, who are more open to legal immigration, they don't want open borders either. And Merkel has proudly accepted immigrants and the process for bringing them in, and Germany actually needs them for their economy. But it has backfired on her. Popularity is down, and she wouldn't be able to keep a government together unless she made some kind of compromise here. And this is what happens when you have different parties. You compromise.
Well, yeah. Well, the question is, when do you compromise too much?
Right.
And the Bavarians, of course, bring to mind the government in Germany that absolutely, wrote the playbook on all of this.
Right. Right, and
so I'm talking
those,
about Hitler.
Yes,
yeah, no, it's scary. I mean, you don't know whether it's better to. I mean, if she lost and then she was knocked out of power, and that they might have more sway. You know, it's a difficult situation. I'm nervous about it. I'm sorry to see it, and I think she's been a strong proponent of democracy. She's been a solid leader of Europe and a solid world leader, and I'd hate to see her get pushed out, and yet. She's weakened by this. Doesn't everybody think?
There's no question about it. Yeah. I've often wondered from the very beginning about this, how she gets away with it. I mean, you're quite right, Mike. She's doing the right thing. She's leading the world. She's creating the template for how we should all be behaving. And yet, we know politics for what it is. And we know the nativists and the others love this immigration thing.
You know, it's like she's the prime minister, you know, of a country that is constantly re-educating itself about what not to do.
And what happened once.
And what happened once, what not to do. She has really been very strong about that. And I think her, what they call the welcoming culture that she preached in 2015, I think she really believes it because of everything Germany had been through. But I think she also understands that not everybody is there yet. She did a great job, you know, and now she wants to be able to stay in the position so she continue to move Germany forward in other avenues and in other settings. And honestly, she is the leader of the free world at this point. And it would be a great a loss if she was replaced by some of these more conservative, nativist, nationalist folks who come right out of the Hitler playbook.
Yeah, it's pretty frightening.
Yeah, I was shocked by the news, having her being the person that we look to in Europe for having a more compassionate border policy. I also was interested to see in the news stories that it is asylum applicants that they're trying to get either rejected or accepted quickly, which is a lot of what we're seeing at our own border, which is, you know, people applying for asylum and not wanting to be labeled as illegal migrants.
Well, you know, she stuck it right in their eye. I mean, when she said, we're going to take 1 million immigrants, she was leading by example. She was doing the honorable thing. But when she did it, I must say, I said, well, that's really gutsy, but I don't know how she gets away with that.
It was very gutsy.
Well, it has political ramifications. What really needs to happen is the war in the Middle East needs to end. The war in Syria needs to end, and that's causing this great migration up into the northern parts of Europe, you know, more into the central parts of Europe, and causing these cultural and population and economic stresses, and some countries are just unable to absorb them. I mean, unable not just physically, but emotionally. They're just really bristling.
I mean, it really is between a rock and a hard place, because you do have these wars going on, and these people are fleeing because they want a better life for their children, just like what's going on
in
Central America and Latin America and they want to live, they want a better life, and then those places are saying no, and then they go back, or they're forced someplace else, and their quality of life is horrible. And it, you know, you know what happened at the border in the United States, and I think we said this last week, is what foments terrorism. It really does, because it instills hatred against America by whoever it is that, you know, we're separated from their families. We don't know what the damage will be and what the long-term effects would this be. The same thing's going to happen in Europe if we keep turning people away. I understand it's a hard nut to crack, and it's difficult, and there's economic issues involved, but we always do better when we extend our hand in peace than we do when we show somebody the door.
Yeah, it's different. So I read an analysis that said something I hadn't really been aware of, but I guess it makes sense, is that when people migrate from the Middle East, from Syria or Palestine or other countries to like Germany, for example, they don't assimilate so easily, and they stay in ghettos, and they remain isolated for a long period of time. I mean, families move in from any country in the world to the United States, and their kids are playing soccer, they're listening on their iPhones to the music, they're going to, you know, fast food restaurants, they're fitting right in. We are actually enriched by their culture, and then they embrace our culture. And that doesn't happen anywhere else on the globe like it happens here. And that makes it even more puzzling why we're so – I mean, the Latino contributions to the U.S. are so strong and so important, especially in California and Texas, but all over the country. And why are we pushing people back? We should be making a process
embracing
where they can come and be vetted and properly brought into the country.
You all know why.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no two ways about why.
I know. They're bad hombres. I saw Trump's announcement he was running for president as he came down the escalator.
No, but this
they're
guy,
rapists and murderers,
well,
et cetera,
and this
et cetera.
This guy gets to his group that way. That's what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. It's red meat.
And, you know, we should, you guys, especially Mike, you're saying that we should. But, you know, we should is the better part of all of us, as opposed to the place where Trump is going. Remember Jiminy Cricket? He always had...
always let your conscience be your
right,
guy.
And he had the two of them sitting on his shoulder, you know, Pinocchio's shoulder. Yes, no.
Yes, the devil and angel.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a whole fistful. He'll read those right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Libby Post. Alan has letters. We'll go there.
We will. We'll go there, Joe. George says, wait. Alan, one of you stated emphatically it is a matter of fact that the Russians have something on Trump. Now, that's what I happen to believe. It seems the most probable explanation of lots of things to me. But calling that a fact with no more evidence than I have is not only a symptom of the age of Trump, but is the way of thinking, believing, speaking that brought us Trump in the first place. I think it was Colbert that originally identified it as truthiness. George. Okay, and then...
There is I know of no proof that the Russians have something on Trump. It's only the Steele dossier, so-called Steele dossier by Christopher Steele, a UK spy who's in private business now, and he did dig up a report that included some very derogatory things that happened in Russia with Trump that may or may not have happened.
Except we do know for sure that the Russians colluded in the campaign, that they impacted the campaign.
We know people are pleading guilty.
No collusion has been proved.
Well, but we do know that the Russians worked very hard to get Donald Trump elected. Let me say that.
And Bernie. They liked Bernie, too.
Well, of course they liked Bernie. They don't like
It would have served their purposes
Hillary.
To have Bernie elected.
Yeah, sure.
It would have been
absolutely.
Chaotic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
David says, international sanctions during the Ukrainian crisis, and this is from the font of all knowledge, Wikipedia, which says, your panel accepted that Obama did nothing after Crimea. Wrong. We kicked the Russia out of the G8 along with other sanctions. Maybe it could have been tougher, but not nothing. Okay, everything is relative. And Libby, I want to warn you about one thing, my dear. And that is, we're on TV, you know, we stream here, right? You know we stream. There are people out there who can read lips. Okay, Richard says, Putin and Ukraine. Panel, after Russia's aggression towards Ukraine and their seizing of the Crimea, Russia was kicked out of the G8, and President Obama supported that measure to punish Putin. And Vincent said, the Republicans in Congress are cowards in all of this. They know that what Trump is doing with NATO and to our best allies is wrong, yet they remain silent, dangerous, to say the least. And AM said, I just heard the conservative on today's panel. I think that's you. I don't know that you're conservative. I think you may be a little bit more conservative than the rest of us.
More than the typical panelists.
I think you play it.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Redemption's more than your average panelist.
I just heard the conservative on today's panel totally deflect a legitimate question by doing what Trump supporters always do. Compare Trump's actions to those of President Obama's, where no comparison is precise or accurate. This always sounds like petty disdain for a man whose biggest problem was wearing a tan suit one time. Trump is a proven liar, and his administration is full of criminals and conservatives still try to blame Obama for ridiculous things. Tell the truth. And Julius says, supposedly the North Koreans have increased uranium enrichment activity. No response from Trump yet. That's a tough one, you know, because what's going to happen to his Nobel Prize? And Jude says, Trump, self-appointed president of the world? That Trump gets away with anything and everything he does is what is so staggering. What gives him the right, in capital letters, the right for, question marks, to represent America by insisting upon a one-on-one meeting with Putin? Question mark, explanation mark. Question mark, explanation mark. Question mark. I'm just reading you all of the stuff that's there.
A lot of punctuation.
And that's from Jude. And then Kathleen says, humanitarian crisis. Good morning, panel. It was very heart-wrenching to see a segment last night on MSNBC about the barbaric conditions in the border detainment centers. A medical volunteer reported adults and children with skin abscesses and common communicable diseases. People are held in cold rooms, in quotes, to treat their respiratory illnesses. How can the press further investigate this horrific situation when these facilities are off access? How can we help?
How can we help? All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. While we're talking about Germany, let's talk about Mexico for a moment. In other world news,
World Cup game yesterday? A match?
Is exactly what we're going to talk about. Mexico election, what are our takeaways from the Mexico election? There is after 18 years of establishment politics, Mexicans decided on Sunday that enough was enough, electing the leftist candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador as president in a landslide victory in an election of firsts.
It was a landslide, all right.
Capturing more than half the vote, according to the early returns, he won by the largest margin in a presidential race since the nation transitioned to democracy 20 years ago.
Wow. Does he go by Obrador or López Obrador?
I do not know, sir.
So I read New York Times the top five takeaways, which I found very interesting. One, he's a leftist politist, populist, anti-establishment, and it's a lot of what we saw last week with our own anti-establishment candidate. And, you know, Trump labeled himself anti-establishment, even though he is an establishment guy. It seems to be a winning message all around the world, at least in Mexico.
Interesting point.
Well, people want change. People, when they're tired of the way things are and they are frustrated by the way things are, they tend to navigate for somebody who's going to shake things up. And I think, you know, we've talked about that a lot here, maybe too much, but I think that's what a lot of people rationalized when they were, you know, with Hillary Clinton, they were going to get more of the same, and they probably wanted to roll the dice and shake up things.
He did say, we are not going to nationalize the banks. Okay. In other words, this is traditional leftist stuff. We're not going to do that. And several other things. He got on the phone with the President of the United States, and they spoke for a half an hour. Now, that doesn't really mean anything, but Trump, of course, is saying, I can get along with him. We can do business. Who knows what that means, right? I mean, this guy could be so left as to admire dictators also.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that Stalin, of course, did business with Hitler for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't work out.
The other thing is, I think this guy has learned from the pitfalls of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela not to repeat the same kind of mistakes. So we'll see what happens. I mean, really, it's violence and drug cartels down there that need to get handled more than anything else.
Well, let's see if he does it.
Yeah, right. That's it. Who knows?
He's got a lot of challenges.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, moving on to other stories in the a couple. You know, this probably won't take a lot long, very long, but the story about the president refusing to lower the flags,
yes,
at the White House over the shooting at the Capitol newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, where five journalists lost their life. Again, what do you win on that?
Why would you lower the flags to salute the death of all these wonderful reporters and folks who run that newspaper when you have described the press as the enemy of the mm-hmm. people? That's what he's thinking.
But if he had done it, he'd probably be criticized also. So he figures he's going to get criticized either way. Why not err on the side of pleasing
his base?
Why
would he be criticized?
I think... He risks looking phony if he did it, because it would be, he's already, as Alan pointed out, labeled the press as enemies. I mean, he did condemn this violence. I mean, he came out and said
after a while.
And this is a way to follow that through.
Yeah, I'm not defending what he's doing. What I'm saying is he's walking that fine line between looking like a hypocrite, because all he has been doing has been calling the press the fake media and been calling it the enemy of the people, to come out and to honor it this way when reporters are slain and journalists are slain while doing their job would perhaps be hypocritical. And it also might draw him criticism from the right wing, from the Fox News people.
From the base.
Or maybe we should just honor them because they're human beings who lost their lives while they were doing their job.
Well, no, you're
right. Everything's not through that prism. It's a political prism.
I understand what the prism is, but when it comes to this and what our country's responsibility is to honor those who have died in a deadly assault, then I think...
Well, you're right for pointing that out, but this is a man who doesn't give a damn about what the majority think about in this country. The only thing he cares about is that base. Mm-hmm. And so when we're discussing this, it occurs to me to ask myself, or to ask you guys, when you say, I won't lower the flag because it would appear to be, you know, saluting the First Amendment institution that it is, the press— is the base really going to rise up and say, if they lowered that flag, that this is a terrible thing? What do you think?
I don't think this helps him with the base. I don't think it helps him with anybody. It just makes him look mean-spirited and petty. And what's the big deal? Lower the flag for these people that lost their lives, you know, these innocent people that lost their lives. I think it was a really dumb decision.
So if you do lower the flag... Then what happens? Do people really come out and say you shouldn't have? No.
Nobody would have. Nobody.
I don't even think this would have been a
would,
story
nobody
had they just
would,
did
exactly.
Correct.
Nobody would notice. Right.
It's at the White House. It's we do this, or we had done this in times of great loss in this country, and it seems that would apply here. I don't know. It just comes off as very petty and very mean.
But this is who this man is. I mean, that's the thing. This is who this man is. He doesn't care. When he was first asked, he was walking across the White House lawn, and he just ignored all the questions. He wasn't going to say anything. I don't think he really is he feels bad about it. I really don't.
Well, it gets complicated. I mean, this gentleman who walked into the newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland last week and shot and killed five people had a grudge against the newspaper, mm-hmm. certainly. He had been, he had pled guilty in a case of harassing someone on Facebook, and the newspaper reported about it, and a columnist opined about it, and he sued the newspaper and lost. He had an axe to grind. You don't know whether any of his actions were influenced by President Trump's demonizing of the free press and calling the press fake news and calling it the enemy. You don't know that. It creates an atmosphere in a lot of places that the press is an enemy, but we don't know about this guy. Maybe we'll never know. And the connection there is tenuous, at least. It would have been a non-story, I think, as Joe just called it, if the president treated this like any other mass killing in the U.S. and just honored the victims and just went on. And that would have been the appropriate thing to do.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many other topics to discuss. Ray Graff is next with news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. So, hats in hand, we tell you that as we were discussing the flag issue and the lowering of the flags, we learned that the president in the last hour, about 8:30 this morning, prior to us going on the air, ordered the flag backpedaled and ordered mm-hmm. the flags at half staff. So just to correct that,
not as a result of our
no, okay. we were already reporting it incorrectly at that point. So yes,
but probably there was some pushback and some criticism that was enough to have him reconsider how this was really inconsistent with the way that we honor all people who are the victims of such brutal violence.
All right.
Somebody's already written us and said, well, why don't we just lower it every time somebody...
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, well, yeah. And why not?
Right. Every time there's a shooting, every time someone's killed by a gun.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
When people realize how pervasive
it's
it is,
NRA.
It would be... yeah, I remember a few years ago, the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle newspaper did a profile of every single person who was killed in the city for a year, and it just put a face on it, and mm-hmm. it underscored the loss and the pain and the you know what was happening in the community. I think it was a great public service.
All right, you have letters, Alan?
I do, Joe. Thank you for asking. Mike says flag. Trump just ordered flags at half staff for five members of the press. Kill. We got that. Guy says flag. For your information, U.S. flag at White House has been lowered to half staff.
Right, I got that.
Right. Yeah, we did that already.
Well, no, he's just saying what we just
yeah,
said.
Yeah, we already said that all. Okay. Nancy says, American exceptionalism, good morning. I think the panel should be careful not to contribute to the myth of American exceptionalism. Comments like immigrants assimilate here better than anywhere else in the world contribute to the idea that we're the best place on the planet for immigrants and refugees. We just returned from a trip to the Baltic region. We met an Iraqi cab driver in Stockholm who had to leave his business in the country 10 years ago so not to be killed by religious fanatics. He brought his family to Sweden, and today his daughter is a dentist married to a Swedish man, and his whole family became citizens June. There are stories like that all over Europe. The myth of American exceptionalism is dangerous because it supports the ethnocentric lies of the Trump administration. Nancy from Stockbridge. Have you guys ever noticed that people who should be supporting each other are finding reasons to, because they're so frustrated with Trump, that they attack each other a little bit more now. I find that very unhealthy. Bob says lowering the flag. But if flags were lowered every time there was a senseless mass shooting, even the base might eventually catch on that maybe some degree of gun control is a good idea. Bob, okay, said Bob. Don't use my name, last name on the air. Okay, Bob. And Ramon. It is odd that anyone could concede hate toward the USA to the point of breeding terrorists against us. Yet the forces that they are fleeing from gets a pass from that hatred. Exposes how some people think. Harleen says, I suggest that Neil deGrasse Tyson run for president of the United States on the Democratic ticket. We need someone who is a scientist that can deal with global warming, somebody who is known to the American people and who is a great communicator. Mary says, how about mentioning the most existential issue in human history? On June 26, Inside Climate News reported the acting head of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration suggested removing the word climate from the research agency's mission statement. He walked it back after a sharp reaction from scientists, but is a stark example of Trump administration efforts to undermine federal work on global warming. And that's for Mary. And the final letter I have here is privacy. Putin and Trump will not be able to get much done if they are alone in the room. As far as I know, neither of them is bilingual. Two interpreters may turn out to be possible leaks. I wonder how safe they would be in the long run. And that's from Barbara in New Marlborough.
Putin speaks English.
Does he?
I've seen a video of it. Yeah, it's quite something.
All right, let's go to other topics in the 12 minutes or so that we have left this morning and find out what else is going on. We go to, let's go over the fight over the Supreme Court. And the President of the United States yesterday interviewed several candidates as the political fight over the replacement for Justice Kennedy intensifies. The President's search for a Supreme Court nominee reached the interview stage on Monday as he announced that he has spoken to at least four contenders while remaining coy about a shortlist for a successor to retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy. I had a very, very interesting morning, Trump told reporters in the Oval Office as he greeted the Dutch Prime Minister. He described the candidates as outstanding people, did not name them, and added that he expects to meet soon with two or three more prospects. They said that he has a July 9th deadline. That Monday will be the deadline where he will announce. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked yesterday at the press briefing why the hurry. And she said the president had put together a list during the campaign. A lot of this work had been done already, and he would see it through and have a choice by his deadline of Monday. Again, we don't have any names. He did apparently, according to reports, say that he would like to have a woman in the post, is what we heard. No names attached to that. Meanwhile, stirs an already intense political standoff over the future of the high court, with the White House setting up a war room Monday to focus on the confirmation process and top Democrats attacking potential nominees.
Well, this is going to come down to whether or not Susan Collins can maintain a backbone.
Well, she hasn't in the past.
I know. And Lisa Murkowski, but also whether or not some of the blue dog Democrats will stay with the party or, you know, go over. Like, I know that the guy from West Virginia.
Joe Manchin.
I was going to say Mnuchin. I knew that wasn't right. Joe Manchin, you know, is in this very precarious situation.
Right.
Heidi Heitkamp also, I think.
Right. These are Democratic senators facing re-election, and they're going to have to vote on the Supreme Court nominee before their election, so that could actually turn people against them. Mm-hmm. It might have some impact on their ability to be re-elected. They're facing tough situations because they're in states where the electorate had gone for Trump during the 2016 election. So it'll force them to perhaps compromise where they would rather be.
And one of the people that I think the president interviewed yesterday is Amy Coney Barrett, and three Democrats already voted for her during her previous nomination to be a federal judge. Senators Donnelly, Kaine, and Manchin have already voted for her.
It would be nice if we could choose a Supreme Court justice and get bipartisan support for him or her, and true bipartisan support, meaning that people are comfortable with her in that role, him or her.
You know, for briefly a minute there, I thought that he might go somewhere which was a sort of compromise for him.
Yeah.
Because the majority, by far, of the American people do not want to repeal, a woman's right for an abortion. So they may not be for abortion, but they don't want Roe changed. So I thought, well, if he wants to get somebody through, but no, he's going to stick to his guns.
Well, he does want someone through quickly. I think a lot of people that work in this part of the White House worked for Bush during the Harriet Myers debacle, and a nominee that he nominates that doesn't get through will be a huge distraction for him this summer going into the fall and going into the fall midterms, which he doesn't want. He wants someone to pass. I almost feel like Susan Collins has a veto. I don't know whether they would check with her, but she is the deciding person, and she is a someone who stated publicly the other day that she doesn't want someone who's publicly opposed to Roe v. Wade.
You know, JP, she said it, but she said it three different ways. And people are looking at the ways that she said it. The last time, she left herself an out. So I don't have much trust that she'll do the right thing. The Democrats are in a bad spot because the last thing you want to do is have the people who voted for you hate you. In other words, you know, you don't want
to... That's not good at election time.
You're right, Alan.
You don't want to lose your base. And we always talk about Trump's base.
He's a political scientist.
Democrats have a base. Democrats have a base also. Yes, I am. It's true. I remember when my colleagues at NYU said to me, what do you want a PhD in political science for? And I said, well, you know, I want to be a college teacher. Oh, you won't do that. You won't get that. Nobody, you'll be driving a cab like the rest of us.
I do think the bar is high, though, for Trump.
Thank
Everybody
God
expects
you got
that.
Your PhD. That's all we have to say.
As you were saying.
Yes. Sorry.
Everybody's expecting. Everybody says, oh, well, you know, the.
Speed it up. The meter's
the
going.
Republicans.
Yes.
Go ahead,
the
JB.
Republicans
Sorry.
Are expecting.
The Republicans are expected to easily pass this nominee, and it is a very narrow majority, if you can even call it a majority, with McCain out. So the expectations game, as everybody knows, is huge in politics, and there's expectations that the Republicans can just get this person through, and I do not think it's going to be that easy for them.
I see one of the candidates is 46 years old. That means that he or she may be around for decades.
For 46 years, perhaps, yes.
Sure. Well, he's bragged about that. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an interesting article. I have two questions about it, but there's an interesting article in the Washington Post about the headline being, "This is not a normal time, a mad hot summer in the capital of the resistance." And the article is about basically all of the things going on in our world right now, of the immigration policies, the with what's happening in what's happening with the Supreme Court, what's happening overseas, of course, with NATO, World Trade Organization, our allies, and what it is like to be in with the resistance. I find this article interesting because it does give you a sense as to how many people on the left feel about the president. I'm also interested because oddly it was in the style section. And I don't quite understand that. Journalistically, can you explain that to me, Mike?
Well, every once in a while you see that in the New York Times also, where they do a profile or they take some they do a takeout on some cultural change in their style section, and it has to do with politics, and it looks out of place. But it regards this as sort of a definable area of lifestyle, of the way people are sort of categorizing themselves,
all
I
right.
guess, yeah.
Okay, lifestyle, I get that. All right. Here we all are, the start of a mad, hot American summer in the nation's capital. A president violating norm after norm, immigrant children wailing for their mothers, a Supreme Court seat open like a wound, a midterm election hurtling toward us like an avenging angel or a killer asteroid, the resistance girding for war or curdling into hysteria, depending on your view.
Yeah, I mean, it's
this is our life, right?
Yeah, I mean, this protesting is now standard. I mean, it's not like it doesn't get the media attention that it once did. It's just there's protests going on all the time.
Well, and as well there should be.
Right, but I mean, a lot of them are not getting, you know, because it's just people are. I can recall that when, you know, people were protesting about the immigration problem now, you know, about children being ripped from their parents' arms as they cross the border, and they were having a rally, I think, down in Kingston or someplace, and they just went over to protest outside John Faso's office, the congressman for that region, and there was a whole bunch of other people there who just go there all the time and protest,
yes,
you know?
There
so well, they kind of came together.
Well, Mike, whose fault is this? I have to say, it's yours. Well, now, why do I say it's yours? Because you're the press, because you're the one who has to make the assignment, get out there and cover that Kingston thing. And somebody said, well, no, you know, they're there all the time. What the heck? Don't you see?
Where does it become news when it's that way all the time?
Dog bites man, man bites dog.
Right. But it's a growing part of our, and you know, maybe it's like the 60s.
It is like the 60s, and it is part of the news. And I understand that you have limited column inches and you have limited airtime, and you know, you can't cover every single thing, but you guys, you know, do have to recognize that when there are millions of people across the country, you know, protesting this past Saturday against the family
separation.
Oh,
we covered it a lot.
Right.
I mean, it got a lot of coverage.
You know, that's it. It's about making those issues on the front page, because this stuff is happening in your community. And, you know, I hear from people, why doesn't AMC cover this, or why doesn't, you know, the TU do that? And I'm like, well, you know, it needs to be news, and it needs to be a little bit different.
Oh, right. And that's a conversation you can have
forever. Forever. Mm-hmm. You know, but the fact is that, you know, you guys, I think the media does need to cover this and recognize that there is now a fundamental shift amongst people who are taking to the streets, who are protesting, who are saying enough is enough. And I think we'll see the ultimate of this in November. You know, we'll see we will see. Everybody's still wringing their hands about the Democrats, they don't have a message, blah blah blah. The resistance is out there, people are more engaged than ever, and we will see the outcome of all of this in the midterm elections.
I also,
and you will write it up and you will print it and you will put it in your style section.
Put another way,
the lifestyle of going out to vote.
That's right.
And what will you wear
Actually,
while you're voting?
It wouldn't be a bad idea of doing
hat.
Something about
JP. I'm sorry.
I thought that that Trump's reversal on child separation was a victory in a way for the resistance. That's something that I think that the resistance can hang on their wall as a victory that
but,
they have.
Yes and no, but then it took the issue right away, and people out there, the great unwashed, think it's all been settled. And what needs to happen now, the emphasis needs to be put on reunifying those families.
And the question was asked yesterday at the press briefing, out of the reunification, when it comes to the however it was six or eight, we don't know what the number is. Mm-hmm. They don't have any idea what the number
they
is.
Don't know where the
They're
kids
not reporting
are.
The number, and so I don't know. You know, is that continues to be reported? That continues to be a question mark that doesn't seem to be reported either.
The fact that he reversed, I would consider a victory for the resistance, and I also think interestingly the victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Queens against Joe Crowley. While mm-hmm. Joe Crowley isn't Trump, she was. You listen to her on Meet the Press and how she has a new, fresh Democratic message that is proactive and forward-looking, and not simply anti-Trump. She has an agenda. She has a message, and she is the face of what could be a new crop of Democratic lawmakers that will be the people opposing Trump after the midterms.
Don't get me wrong. I love the woman. However,
already?
We don't even know her.
You just met her.
I love her. I love the fact that she speaks the way that she does and all the rest of it. But she does not speak the language of politics. If you listen
that's
to her.
That's good.
That's
Isn't
right.
Isn't that good? That's what Obama had.
I could not
that's,
agree
that's
more.
Good.
Well, but she, Obama was stentorian compared to the depth of of her voice. Her voice is not nearly, it is much more like the kids that Libby teaches in college and that I teach in college, and that's
she's only slightly older than those college students.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I'm the Democratic Party, do I want her on Meet the Press, or do I want Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer?
No,
I think she's a much better messenger for the Democratic Party than any leaders in the Senate or House right
as
now.
As always, you're right.
Believe it there. Thank you very much.